There was a tweet a few years ago by writer Sarah Hoggy that spawned a slew of memes, t-shirts, and tote bags. It reads, "Carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white man." Writer Ijeoma Aluo says, "It's more than a pithy line about mediocre individuals given unlimited power, and instead a system we all play a part in." Aluo writes about this in her new book, Mediocre, A Legacy of White Male America. And she joins me now from Seattle, Washington. Hey, Ijeoma.
Hi.
This new book takes us through history and shows us how white supremacy, and more specifically white male mediocrity, has become the core ideology of this country. What do you mean by white male mediocrity? It's not the individual so much as a system that we are all complicit, you say. How do we begin to define it?
I think that, you know, where I define it is really in this idea that white men deserve political power and wealth and safety and security just because they're white men. The idea that they will be seen as the strongest, the best leaders, the most successful, that they will always do better than women and people of color in our society has to be protected regardless of whether or not the white men in question actually have the skills or talent or accomplishments to back up said power or achievements. And so what it does is it's a system that protects mediocrity, that sets that as the goal. And the idea that anything would ask for more of our systems, let alone the people within these systems, becomes a threat to the status quo and to our systems of power.
Would you say this is just an extension of or part of capitalism?
Absolutely. I would say it's not even necessarily an extension of capitalism. It's one of capitalism's main protections. It's how capitalism gets people to sign on repeatedly. It's this idea that your payout is coming. So it may not be readily apparent in your financial status. It may not be, you know, readily apparent in, you know, what percentage of income you're taking home versus what you're creating for businesses. But you will at least look in the mirror and feel better than women or people of color. And it's what gets people signed on, saying, of course you're going to have greatness. It's coming. But it also is a great deflection for why that paycheck never comes. That, you know, oh, well, if you're not getting it, you were supposed to. So someone must have taken it from you. Let's look at these women. Let's look at these people of color who are suddenly getting more, and they must have taken what's yours.
Okay, flipping that a little bit, I have to ask you something that I've been thinking about, which is, who has the right to be mediocre and not just survive, but thrive? Is mediocrity divorced from whiteness what we're striving for? I mean, basically the alternative being that we expect women and women of color more specifically to be exceptional at all times.
You know, I think that's a really great question. And I would say there are two things we're looking at. One, I absolutely believe that every human being, regardless of skill or talent, deserves to have a roof over their head, deserves to feel safe and secure in society. And I don't think that talent or power or prestige or race or gender should dictate, you know, whether or not you get to survive in this country or feel safe in this country. But who leads us and who we reward for their contributions should actually be making meaningful contributions that improve the lives of people in our society, should be leaders that can effectively lead and bring prosperity to everyone, regardless of race and gender or skill or talent, you know. And that's something, you know, that's where I think the difference is. There are fundamental human rights that all of us absolutely deserve that shouldn't have to be earned. And then there's also who leads us, to being able to achieve that. And it should be people who've shown that they can effectively lead.
In your book, you select key moments to show how this system works, from the way women were kicked out of the workforce after the Great Depression, to the way that women of color in politics are challenged for holding views on equity in ways their white male colleagues are not. How do you go about choosing what to focus on?
Yeah, you know, I could have written 100 books, right, on this topic and had so much to focus on. And it really, you know, started first with asking, for me, fundamental questions about white male identity in America as a political and social construct, right, through time. And collecting stories and looking through all of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of articles and books and saying, where am I seeing common threads? Where am I seeing something that illustrates, you know, one of the fallacies of these sort of ideals in our society, and what does that look like through time? And so a lot of it was pulling these threads and looking at one story and going, gosh, you know, I can see how this directly ties into this earlier manifestation or this later manifestation of it. So it really, you know, I surprised myself a lot by the things that I ended up including in the book, because it really was, you know, information that was new to me, that, or information I didn't realize was connected till I was diving in.
How do you go about introducing intersectionality, or at least the ways in which this ideology can create fraught relationships between, say, white women and women of color?
One thing that was really clear to me in this book was that you cannot separate race and gender, right, in America, that the power structures that uphold our systems, those two are linked. White supremacy and patriarchy are linked. But what that means then is often when it comes to people who are impacted by maybe one part of white supremacist patriarchy, they'll make deals with it. And so in looking at intersectionality, it's important to recognize that there are segments of the population, segments of what the white women of white women in this country who've decided that their best chance at power is their proximity to white men and upholding white male power, even if it means they will never achieve true liberation. And so we have to look at, you know, in intersectionality, the different ways in which we've made these deals, whether, you know, these are deals because we align ourselves with white men, because we are married to white men, because we've given birth to white men, or because we've decided that we should emulate white men. And who can and who cannot do that have set up different layers of oppression that can often still be baked into our fight for freedom when we don't realize that we're in many ways still hoping to hold on to our proximity to power, even if it is tied to someone else's oppression, while saying we're fighting oppression. So it is really vital when looking at this that we always kind of come back to who's the most impacted by these systems. Because in that, in trying to align ourselves with people who are most impacted, we're going to also confront the ways in which we have been invested in the oppression of others as well and have been upholding these systems. There's no way any of us get true liberation while holding on to our proximity to oppressive power.
You note that white male mediocrity is also killing white men, that we need a new vision for white masculinity. What does that look like, and who is responsible for that vision to take hold?
You know, I don't know what it will look like, because that will absolutely, at the end of the day, be up to white men and up to the people who raise white men and invest in white manhood, right? So we need to look at this and say, this isn't working. It is absolutely harming white men as well. Yes, the extreme brunt of it has fallen on women, non-male populations, and people of color for generations. But 70% of suicides right now are white men. Right. There is something desperately wrong. And we have to figure out what, because it is impacting all of us. But if you care about white men, if you are a white man, if you love white men, you have to start thinking, what is a healthier way to define success in this society? Because there is something incredibly toxic about not knowing how to feel about yourself until you know how you compare to other people. And that's how we have set up our definitions of success in white male society. It is not your own individual talents. It is not your contributions to society. It's, are you doing better at the end of the day than women or people of color? And that's no way to live. That's no way to think about yourself. There is no self-love in that.
Those suicide rates are astounding. But to that end, what incentive that those who benefit from this ideology and power structure, which, as you note, are not just white men, but also white women and people of color. How do we divest without losing it all? And what incentive is there when, as you show, white male mediocrity is so effective at reproducing itself?
You know, one thing that we are suffering from is a collective lack of imagination. We have been so brainwashed into thinking this is the absolute best we can accomplish. I mean, how many times do you hear someone saying, yeah, this system sucks, but it's the best we've got? Why? Why is this the best we've got? We created this system. We can create something new. But what we have to have is faith in each other and faith in our own, you know, capabilities to create better. And that means looking at the better that's being created and valuing it. It's important to recognize that, You know, there are communities of color right now who have always had to come up with ways to survive and even thrive outside of our systems. Value that and look at that and say, we can create things, right? Look at even in white manhood itself, groups of white men who have said, this is not for me. And they've taken on these extreme battles and found truer versions of themselves. We need to look at that and value it. But that means we have to look at all of the ways in which we have been conditioned to think, you know, that these are limits placed on us, that this is all we can do, and divorce ourselves from it. What I argue is the path that we're on right now, we have very little to lose by trying something new and better, by having faith in each other. We created this system, and it's just one of many, and we can create so many more.
That's Ijeoma Aluo talking about her brand new book, Mediocre, A Legacy of White Male America. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you so much.